Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. Health and emergency management experts say the current pandemic offers lessons for future disasters. Some experts warn that another pandemic is inevitable. Today, we'll talk with public health experts about what we can do to prepare for the next pandemic. We'll also check in with Chief Medical Advisor to the President, Dr. Anthony Fauci. That's next, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Billboards have gone up in multiple states urging lawmakers to confirm Representative Deb Haaland's nomination as Secretary of Interior. The Hill reports the Global Indigenous Council and Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council put up the billboards in West Virginia, Wyoming, Montana, and South Dakota. Those are the home states of Senators Joe Manchin, John Barrasso, Steve Daines, and Mike Rounds, respectively. Daines has been a vocal opponent and said he will vote against Haaland's nomination. Manchin said he will vote for Haaland. Global Indigenous Council President Tom Rogers said that the billboard went up before the senator announced his support. But Rogers noted that other lawmakers were not as courteous as Manchin, and the billboards are designed to, quote, teach them a teachable moment for history. The signs have images of Haaland and say the first people to receive this land, the last to receive the vote, and our first Secretary of the Interior support Representative Deb Haaland. Barrasso said of the billboards that Haaland did not sufficiently answer questions during the hearing. A spokesperson for Daines said the senator, quote, respects the feedback from all Montanans. Two schools in Eugene, Oregon were recently bestowed towering hand-carved totem poles by the school's District 4J Natives program. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
COVID-19 delayed delivery of the first pole to North Eugene High School by nearly a year. There was a much smaller crowd than usual, but they were no less appreciative. School principal Trinity Welch Radabaugh.
It's a way to honor our Native staff, students, and community, to honor the land on which our school is built.
North Eugene senior Haley Nightpipe and junior Keith Sheck, both with the Natives program, were pleased to see the poles installed.
It feels really great because we've worked so hard to get this thing up and we finally got it up.
It feels good to know that, like, when I graduate, our legacy will still be here.
The second pole was installed at Madison Middle School. Native staff say once on-campus schools are in session, there will be a larger ceremony for the totem poles. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
In California, Native Americans are concerned they're being undercounted in data on deaths from COVID-19. USA Today reported indigenous leaders there, as elsewhere, are seeing significant numbers of deaths in their communities. Data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows American Indians and Alaska Natives are the single group hardest hit by the pandemic. But there's a longstanding problem in California and around the country of Native Americans being racially misclassified. The state has the largest number of American Indians and Alaska Natives, but they're often declared white, Latino, or black on forms by hospital workers, or they're listed as other. In Colorado, Native American advocates last week made the case at a legislative committee hearing to replace a statue with a memorial to the Sand Creek Massacre. Colorado Public Radio reports protesters tore down a statue of a soldier that listed Sand Creek as a battle. In 1864, U.S. soldiers killed at least 230 Cheyenne and Arapaho people at Sand Creek, most of them women, children, and the elderly. Now, a proposed bronze statue created by a Sand Creek descendant could take its place. It depicts a Cheyenne woman sitting with her left arm extended while holding an empty cradle board, signifying the loss of her child. Some lawmakers have not opposed the statue, but have taken issue with putting it in such a prominent site. But Democratic State Representative Susan Lontine told the Denver Channel the location on the building's west steps is appropriate because troops returning from the massacre paraded body parts as trophies through the streets of Denver and ended at that spot. The Capital Development Committee plans discussion of location for a future meeting. The committee and the governor's office must approve that location before the full legislature can vote on it. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org. If you're a Native American expanding or starting a business, the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can make the business loan you need. Info by emailing dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We are all looking forward to the day when life will return to normal, when we can greet each other with hugs and handshakes. But it's not clear how long it will be until that time. But even as we endure the current crisis, many people are documenting what we've learned so far and the ways that will inform the next public health emergency. If you could go back in time, knowing what we know now about the pandemic, what would you do to prepare? What supplies or knowledge do you plan on having on hand looking ahead? That's our conversation today. We're also going to hear from Dr. Anthony Fauci, Chief Medical Advisor to President Joe Biden. Everyone's welcome to the conversation. If you could go back and talk to your pre-pandemic self, what would you tell yourself? Give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Long Beach, California is Jake Heflin. He's the president and CEO of the Tribal Emergency Management Association, or ITEMA. And Jake is Cherokee and Osage. Jake, thanks for joining us for another Native America Calling.
Thank you very much, Monica. Happy to be here.
All right. And also joining us from the Redwoods in California is Richard Maitens. He is the executive director of the Consolidated Tribal Health Project. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you so much, Monica. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, Jake, let's start with you. Time machine. You go back, you tell yourself, you know, without breaking the time-space continuum or messing with anything, you just get to talk to you, pre-pandemic you, what would you tell yourself?
I think for me personally, somebody that is involved in this public safety field for over 30 years, I think it's prepare now. I think that specifically as it relates to how to stay safe when a pandemic threatens, there are things that are essential that you take, steps that you can take immediately. For instance, starting with just learn how the disease spreads. Whether it's the flu, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's the bird flu, we've had these novel coronaviruses before, and I think the idea is that there are things that we can do, where there's actions we can take to prevent the spread of disease, whether that's covering your cough and sneeze, staying home when you're sick, washing your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, right? These are some essential things that are going to help whether or not we're dealing with COVID-19 or a future pandemic, and other things like planning for schools and workplaces and community centers to be closed, creating an emergency plan, gathering your supplies in case you need to stay home for several days or weeks, reviewing your health insurance policies, and create digital copies of important documents to store in a safe place. Watch out for the scams and the fraud. These are all things that we can do now. Specifically to prepare ourselves. And so whether we're dealing with a pandemic, whether we're dealing with a fire or a flood or an earthquake for that matter, preparedness is essential. And we'll talk a little bit more about preparedness as we move forward in the conversation. But I would say absolutely, if I were looking at myself, these are critical things that I think are important for us moving forward for a future pandemic or any other event or large-scale incident that's going to impact our family.
What about you, Richard?
Well, for me, the issue has been we were able to do something with COVID dollars that we should have done before, but we didn't have the opportunity to. As I think you and I discussed earlier, is that I run a clinic that serves 8 different federally recognized tribes in Mendocino County. And so what we were what I would do and continue to do is an assessment of public health status within each of the tribes. Every tribe with whom I work is very different, and their capacity is different. And so to be able to provide an assessment and knowing where we are beforehand would have been so much to our advantage when this pandemic hit. So now I said, I feel we've gotten at least a foundation going forward, learning what each of the individual tribal communities are dealing with and how they can respond. And furthermore, in terms of this, is including messaging that is culturally specific to each of the communities.
When you say, like, even just doing an assessment, do you mean something as basic as, like, how many masks do we have on hand? Or are you talking about bigger items?
Well, I'm talking about what each tribe actually has. It's PPE is one thing, yes. There's no doubt about it, and that's the infrastructure, what kind of PPE is involved. But also what programs are in place. What is the infrastructure to respond immediately to such a quickly evolving situation? I have a situation where one of my tribes is so remote, is they have such great needs, but their human resources aren't available to be able to address the public health response that's necessary, while others have more resources and are closer to more urbanized areas. So every tribe is very different in terms of what that assessment actually addresses.
Well, today we're talking about preparing for the next pandemic. And are you doing things now, thinking ahead to when maybe we've got this under control a little bit more, but maybe something new comes up? How are you planning ahead if you are thinking about it? Are you going to grow your own food or stock up on supplies? What do you plan for in the future? Give us a call and share. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I really want to hear from y'all on this today, particularly what you would tell yourself if you could go back pre-pandemic and talk to yourself and say, hey, this is coming, you should do this. I think I would go back and tell myself, save some money, pile up some cash, because things are coming and you wanna be prepared. 1-800-996-2848, that's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Give us a call right now. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Melvin in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Hey there, Melvin, good to hear your voice.
Good morning. This is a great subject. When the pandemic hit here, we were lucky to have a doctor at our clinic who went to Africa during that Ebola thing and went through that whole quarantine thing when he came back. So he had all that to help us prepare our clinic for this outbreak. And the other thing is to educate the community quick as possible. One of our biggest outbreaks was because of a baby shower. Out of that baby shower, 140-some people were infected in a community of 400.
Wow.
And that was a big hit to us. Lucky our staff at the clinic was prepared. And the other thing is our community wasn't prepared. You know, we're food dependent. You know, we didn't have a food plan. You know, where we took care of everybody, we were prepared for that. And I recommend that all the tribes and communities have a food plan. You know how much food's at your school, your casino area, your store, your nutrition centers, and know so in case of something, we get shut off and they can't deliver food, we can gather our food and feed all the people and we would have something. So being prepared is very important.
Right. It absolutely is, Melvin. Thank you for those. I really appreciate it. And I want to hear from you too. Are you preparing for what's next? Are you going to plant a garden this summer, or stock up food, maybe teach yourself to can, or other ways that you're planning on preparing for what could possibly be another pandemic that we might have down the road? Call us and share, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Jake, we're going to go to a break soon, but I want to give you a moment to respond to what Melvin shared, his ideas for planning ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And Melvin, thank you for your comments. I think there's no question that there are things that we need to do now, immediately, to be prepared. And I think there, to try to keep it simple, I want to talk about five safety steps. We're going to call them the 5 points of preparedness, so to speak, that you can take right now to make yourself and your family more prepared, ready, and resilient. And the first step is to get alerts. And we'll talk a little bit about that because I know we're going to go to break here. But the second step is make a plan. The third step would be to pack a go bag. The fourth step would be to build a stay box. And the fifth step would be to help friends and neighbors. And I think that, you know, we'll come back to this, but I want to go through these points with us on the, during the show, because I think they're really important. Even though we're talking about pandemics, the point is that we don't know what's going to happen. We know that history tends to repeat itself. And historically, as tribal communities, we know that we're vulnerable to some of these things. And so I think the conversation that we can have today is certainly focused around those 5 points of preparedness, because they're simple, they're easy steps that we can take to take care of ourselves, our families, and our tribal communities. And I think that's really, I think it's important that we have these conversations.
I agree. And we will go through those five. So if you didn't quite catch them, don't worry. We're going to reiterate them after the break. But I also want to throw that out there to you, the listening audience. Have you done anything to prepare for a future disaster or a next upcoming pandemic, the potential of having another pandemic? Give us a call and share, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And also, do you see your tribe as preparing for what's happening next? Do you think that your tribe was prepared for this particular pandemic that we are facing right now? You can call us and share. You can call in anonymously. I know if you are nervous about putting your name out there, if you have some criticism of your tribe, that's okay. You can use a different name. It's totally fine. Again, the number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. But I also want to hear, you know, some of the fun things you might be thinking of in terms of getting ready for the next pandemic, including I love to plant a garden. I love to hear about people with food. We'll be right back. Mexico's indigenous populations have a different relationship with the government compared to the United States. But indigenous people on both sides of the border have many common issues, including a legacy of colonialism and discrimination, and a rich language and cultural traditions. We'll look at Mexico's indigenous heritage on the next Native America Calling.
Na iga udage di jeha guwahidasti. Tatlanoheta niawia uyela nudanadega anexestiski. Naski yiged stela at healthcare.gov ale 1-800-318-2596. He aged anosa Medicare hale Medicaid unadalka I.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We are talking about preparing for what's next today. Are you planning for another pandemic? Maybe you've decided to stock up on supplies, or are you going to grow your own food? Give us a call, share. The number to get you into the conversation is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's take a call. We've got Thomas in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Hey there, Thomas. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Am I on the air now?
Yeah, you are. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to make a comment on Melvin's idea of being prepared and growing your own food. Mm-hmm. Well, we knew through prophecy a generation ago that this was coming, but the problem was to create an internalized economy, a bubble, so to speak, not what the federal government tells us, but what the our elders have warned us about. But it seems to me that our own people are our worst enemy, and we're still not preparing for another epidemic or a pandemic.
Yeah, Thomas, it's a tough one, and it's very complex. We'll definitely go to Jake and talk to Jake about that a little bit more. But first, I want to go to Bethesda, Maryland. We've got Dr. Anthony Fauci on the line. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and chief medical advisor for President Joe Biden. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Fauci.
Thank you for having me. Good to be with you.
Yeah. Okay. So today we are talking about how to prepare for the next pandemic. And I want to give you a moment to talk about that. What do you want to share with our listeners about what we need to think about for the next pandemic coming around?
Well, there are certain things and lessons that we will have to have learned from the really historically difficult experience that we've gone through over the last year. And that is, we need to beef up our local public health infrastructure so that when you have cases like you have early on in an outbreak, you can adequately identify, isolate, and contact trace. We also learn that we have to have available within our own country and not rely upon foreign sources for things like personal protective equipment, for masks, and for some of the essential ingredients of some of the interventions, for example, the tests, the drugs, and the vaccines. But also probably the best lesson is the importance of basic biomedical research, preclinical and clinical research, which has brought us the one really good news about this outbreak, which is the extraordinary success of more than one vaccine, but several vaccines that have proven to be highly efficacious and safe, where the challenge now is to just produce it and get it to as many people as we possibly can, as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about that as well, because I know that there are still some folks that Indian country has come out and really pushed our vaccine drives, and some tribes have really, really, like the Navajo Nation, have really pushed to get as many folks vaccinated as they can. But we still have folks who are concerned about the safety of this. This was developed very quickly. And what can you share about the safety of this vaccine, Dr. Fauci?
Well, concern about safety is a reasonable concern, but it can be countered by the data and the evidence. So let me explain. First of all, the speed with which this was done was not by sacrificing safety, but is a reflection of the extraordinary advances that have been made in scientific advances in vaccine platform technology to be able to allow us to do things in months that a decade ago may have taken years to do. So it's the science that got us here, and that's years and years of science that antedated the less than a year it took to go from an identification of the new virus to actually getting doses of vaccines in people's arms. In addition, the proof of the safety and the efficacy were done in clinical trials with tens of thousands of people. In the Moderna trial, there were 30,000 volunteers. In the Pfizer trial, there were 44,000 volunteers. In the J&J trial, there were over 40,000 volunteers. And each of them came up by independent evaluation of the data on that trial to be highly efficacious and safe. So the science is the firm basis for understanding why these vaccines are efficacious and safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta love science, Dr. Fauci. What about the new variants of the coronavirus that we're seeing? What can you share about them and how the vaccine will help with that or not?
Well, the vaccine is essential to prevent infection. And when you prevent infection, you prevent the evolution of variants. Right now, we have a variant in our country that is gaining momentum. It's called the 117. It originated in the UK, and it is anticipated that by the end of March, it might be the dominant virus in our country. The encouraging news is that the vaccines that we are currently distributing, the Moderna, the Pfizer, and soon the J&J, work very well against this variant. However, there are some other variants that are more concerning. There's the South African variant, a 351, as we call it. There's a variant in New York City metropolitan area, a 526. And there's a variant in California, a 427, 429, each of which are concerning to us. The best way to get around this is to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as you possibly can, as well as to continue to abide by the public health measures that prevent the transmission of any virus, including the variants. And that's washing hands frequently, wearing a mask all the time, particularly indoors, keeping physical distance, and avoiding congregate settings. Those are the things that will protect us against infection, whether it's the wild-type standard virus or if it's a variant virus. Very important to do those things.
Yeah, so I know you got to get going, Dr. Fauci, but I just want to, touch on that last thing that you mentioned. What about gatherings? You know, we're seeing in some areas the rates are going down, and maybe there's some feelings like we could start to gather again. This is something that's particularly important in Native America to gather. So what do you want to share about that?
That will come soon if we continue to go in the downward deflection of the curve of infections. The more people get vaccinated, the more the infection rate goes down. You will soon be seeing recommendations and guidelines from the CDC that will help you to be able to get back to somewhat of a normality, including what you value so much, such as gatherings, as tribal nations often consider that appropriately as a very important part of their social interaction. That will come very soon, we hope.
But for now, Dr. Fauci?
But for now, I would not do that. I think it would be premature, and you don't want to risk another surge of infections in your community. So just hang on a little bit longer, continue to get as many people vaccinated as possible, and then the risk of gathering will be markedly diminished.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, he is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And if you're just joining us today, we're talking about preparing for the next pandemic. And what do you think about that? If there's another pandemic around the corner, are you prepared? Where did you feel prepared for this particular pandemic that we are experiencing right now? Give us a call and share. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Richard Maitens is with us. He is the executive director of the Consolidated Tribal Health Project. And Richard, I want to give you a moment, since you work in the medical field, if you wanted to respond to anything that Dr. Fauci had shared.
Yes, it was great to hear him talk about the different variants out there. One of the biggest questions that we keep coming back with a lot of our folks is that how effective is the vaccine against the variants? And also the hesitation about taking vaccines in general. In our area, there's a lot of resistance to vaccines among the Native population. So we have to do a lot of education, a lot of trying to dispel myths regarding this. And as he, I was glad he talked about that no science was cut short in the development of the vaccine. It was a, it was an expedited process, but it didn't mean it was any less safe. For us, in terms of this, is that one of our biggest work is working with tribal communities to encourage vaccine and have role models take it. I talked about this with my board, and a number of my board members are taking the vaccine, even though they may have hesitation, because they are concerned is for the community, and they want to be role models for their tribal communities. So I think, you know, we have a lot of work, and if we work through it now and we continue to do this going forward in terms of providing public health education in a preventive way that's broad, not only around COVID, but other issues, then there will be, I think, a further appreciation of preventive and proactive health care.
Yeah, Richard, I have to admit that when they first started developing it, I was concerned because it seemed so quick that it was coming together. But it, once you do the research and you start to learn a little bit more about it, what you're learning about is science. They're building on the backs of other scientific research. It wasn't like they started from zero and went to 10. You know, they started at like a 7, basically. And I just wonder, you know, like, is that something, you know, Dr. Fauci mentioned improving public health. And so is that something that you're sort of thinking about in terms of planning for the future, is one, this education piece and building up these local public health, you know, in our case, tribal health in our communities?
Exactly. I think, you know, which is one of the reasons why we did the public health assessment in the fall, is way I start is we don't know where we need to go if we don't know where we are. And so because we're, you know, we, our clinic does deal with 8 individual tribes, separate tribes, they're all at different spaces. And so we have to start where each individual tribe is, each individual community is, and build upon that. And I think it's important that it's not a cookie-cutter approach to public health and prevention. But we have to take it very, very seriously in terms of what does it mean, and have a deeper appreciation of prevention messaging and also being able to meet people where they are. There's oftentimes an assumption that people should be at a given space. You can't do that. You got to say, okay, this is where they are. How do we get them to that space in terms of an understanding and appreciation of these norms?
Yeah, it's almost what the caller Thomas was talking about earlier, you know, trying to create the safety bubble. And then he said, we are our own worst enemies, you know. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but like it is challenging because a lot of this has to do with education and behavior change. And so I'm wondering if you might speak to that, Richard.
Exactly. And I think, you know, if you want long-term change, you have to really focus on long-term attitudes. If you know, fear only goes so far. You know, I think a lot of times you have a lot of fear tactics. You got to get this, or you're going to get sick. You know, but
yeah.
If you really want long-term behavior change, you need to look at attitudes and expectancies and assumptions that people have, and that is much harder because that is not only like a one-shot or one-dimensional approach. As an example, you can't if you're dealing with teenagers, you can't just deal with the teenagers. You have to also deal with the parents, because where do the teenagers get their norms? You have to educate the entire community, but maybe use different approaches with different aspects of that community. So it's not an easy thing to do, which is why, you know, in public health, you have to really be specific in terms of your messaging with the communities. Who do you want to receive the message, and what message do you want them to receive, and tailor it appropriately?
Jake Heflin is with us. He's the president and CEO of ITEMA. That's the Tribal Emergency Management Association. And Jake, I want to give you a moment to weigh in on any of these different threads that we're going about and talking about preparing for the next pandemic.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's actually establishing a new norm. I think that's it's what's establishing what we're talking about here is how do you change behaviors in the sense of being proactive and preventative. When we look at medicine, the success of medicine is often predicated on preventative medicine. So the idea is, how do we take care of people before they get sick? How do we change the behaviors that lend itself to the increase in these risks, right? So I think it's very similar with regards to the pandemic. Is we obviously want to minimize the spread, and so ways that we can do that is that we've really talked a lot about that throughout Indian country. But we already obviously know in Indian country we have some unique and inherent challenges. Specifically, we have challenges with communication. We talked about how do we communicate to our communities. Sometimes that can be very difficult when they're isolated. And so isolation itself goes counterintuitive to our culture. The idea of transportation, right? They're obviously, rural and reservation communities can be geographically isolated without easy access, roads or public transport. And then the idea of emergency sheltering and food sites. We talk about these sites may not be close by. So as far as how we have to prepare and plan for as emergency managers, to develop and create those sites that are easily accessible, or that we can provide and create distribution plans for that. That's all part of this process. And then we really have our elders, and they have special needs within emergency situations. We need to consider those medicines or those medical supplies that are used regularly. Talking to our programs like Consolidated Tribal Health, the hospitals, the clinics, and other service providers about those plans. And what mm-hmm. happens if the electricity is out? I mean, but just for medical equipment.
Right.
So these are those things
Hang on, Jake. We're going to talk more about that. I want to also go back over those 5 points that you brought up earlier in the show. If you're just joining us, we're talking about preparing for the next pandemic, and we'd like to hear from you too. The phone lines are open. There's still time to get in on the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-996-2848.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Today we are talking about preparing for the next pandemic. And has this pandemic made you think about being more self-sufficient? Are you trying to grow your own food, or maybe you've been stocking up in water or other things? Call us and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I also want to give space if you want to talk about how you feel like your tribe was prepared for this pandemic in particular, or the things that you would like to see them do in the future. 1-800-996-2848. Jake Heflin from Tribal Emergency Management Association, or ITEMA, is with us. Jake, before the break, you were talking about, preparing for having the electricity go off. Go ahead, share some more about that.
Yeah, I think so when we talk about the 5 points of preparedness, and this is, I want to go over that again. I think the first thing we want to talk about is getting alerts. And we talk about alerts in the sense that, at least here in California, you can subscribe to calalerts.org. But even in your local communities, specifically in tribal communities, there are many ways to access alerts, for instance, whether that's watching or listening to your local news programs on approaching disasters. The emergency alert system that might interrupt the program with a loud or unique sound to get your attention. Leave your TV on so you can hear it. These are important to stop and pay attention to what's being said. Obviously, you have the radio or phone lines or landline phones, whether they're cell phones. Many times there are different counties, and they have their own emergency service or alert orders or evacuation orders that will be distributed through these alert mechanisms. So you can install, for instance, you can install in California, you have an app called My Shake on your smartphone to get a rapid response alert in time to drop, cover, and hold during an earthquake. And then you have your wireless emergency alert system that automatically sends messages to those mobile devices as well. There's obviously social media, amateur radio, and then these websites. So learn how to access and subscribe to your local emergency alert program. That's step number one. The next step is, in the context of that, is making a plan. Right, make a plan to protect your people, and that plan is it can be as simple as for starting with a contact list. think about people that you would want to stay in communications with during an emergency. And do you have their contact information, a phone number or email address, a way to get in contact with them at places like work or school? Pick one person, an outside the area where you live, who wouldn't be affected by your local disaster. You and your family and others would know to contact them and check in with them to let you know that they're safe, that faraway relative or friend to share where you are. And make sure that your distant contact knows that they're part of your plan and discuss this with them. So creating that contact list is important. And then choosing your emergency meeting place, right? Where would you want to reunite? Sometimes families get separated during a disaster, and if it's not possible to stay safe at home or a school or work, you need another place to reunite, and that's part of having that conversation. A familiar place might be a meeting place in your neighborhood or one outside of your neighborhood or one outside of your town. Your meeting place could be a home of a relative or a friend or a store or library or park. If you have pets or service animals, think about animal-friendly places to meet. And then in the context of also making that plan is who to rely on. Right. If you've signed up for those emergency alerts in your county, when things are changing and conditions are changing fast, where are you going to get some of those information? Obviously, you might have your local law enforcement within the tribal community. These are individual or locations or places or people that you can trust for valid or updated information. And then how to evacuate. And this is a challenge in tribal communities. We want to make sure about thinking calmly about potential problems as you might evacuate to save your family during a disaster. Get a proper map or make sure that the roads are intact. And then mark multiple escape routes on that map in case you can't use a major road or a roadway. And if you don't have a car, check with your local transit authority or agency or your neighbors. Or make sure that you're checking on those people within your community that have limited mobility. That's part of that proactive planning or that pre-planning that we do. Every minute you spend practicing now will reward you during a real emergency, and it will tell you exactly what you need to do and then finding shelter. So that's part of making a plan.
Right. And Jake, I just have to point out, you know, there's a couple of things. One is that I don't have any phone numbers memorized. If the phones went down or I lost cell service or you know, something like that, I wouldn't. And so writing those phone numbers down is so critical. And then, I like what you said about maps too, because we're so dependent on our phones. I use, you know, any of those services on my phone to tell me how to get somewhere, and we've got to go back and learn how to read maps, or, you know, figure out, just memorize the best exit route that you would need to take to get to that emergency meeting place. I just want to point those things out too.
Absolutely, Monica, you're right. And people take for granted that they're going to have power. And I'll tell you what, you lose power with that smartphone or that device that you've become so reliant on, you're in trouble. And I think that's part of this process is what does that look like? I mean, I've talked to people about getting these little solar chargers where you can charge your cell phone or your mobile device off solar. So there are these little things that you can do right now. For every dollar we spend in preparedness, we potentially save $7 to $10 in response and recovery. So I want to say that again. For every dollar we spend in preparedness, we potentially save $7 to $10 in response and recovery. And if you knew you could invest that in the stock market, every one of you would go out and invest that. But yet we need to invest this in ourselves, right? So yeah. I think that's the idea, is that by planning right now and creating and following these steps, we can make a significant difference in how our families, our communities respond and increase our resiliency. And as tribes, we are amongst the most resilient people in the world because we're still here. We have to continue to develop that, continue to enhance that. Culturally, that's really important for us as Native people. So I think that's yeah. Important. Go ahead.
Hold on one second. Before we get to 3, 4, and 5, I want to squeeze in a call. We've got Kim, who's driving in New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Kim. Go ahead. You're on air.
I just wanted to say that as a truck driver who drives through Wyoming, Nebraska, Illinois, Iowa, New Mexico, Texas, I drive everywhere. And I sometimes go into smaller communities. I was just in one where I drove through a reservation area where I had to stop to get supplies. And it's amazing to me how, and I'm going to say this, and I know it's probably not going to be popular, but states with Republican people that don't believe in the virus or wearing a mask, you go into these truck stops and there's signs on the door that actually say you have to wear a mask, but then you go in there and people aren't doing it. They're not social distancing, they're coughing, they're sneezing on you. And then you go into a smaller community in New Mexico, like I just did last night, and same sign, and everybody's wearing a mask, and everybody's social distancing. And it just makes me sick that people don't care enough about their neighbors or human life that they would put other people in jeopardy over politics. And I appreciate your program. I listen to you guys all the time. And thank you for everything that you do.
Thanks, Kim. Great to hear trucker listening to our show. We always appreciate that. And you can get in on the conversation, too. What are you doing to prepare for the next pandemic? Do you feel like your community is prepared, was prepared for this particular pandemic? And are you preparing for the future? The number to join is 1-800-996-2848. We can squeeze in a few more calls if you call right now. Jake, let's go on to number three.
The third step is to pack a go bag. And when we talk about a go bag, the go bag is something that holds the most important information, like copies of legal documents, insurance records, medication lists, other items that you'll need to grab quickly if you're ordered to evacuate. If you have an old backpack or something like that around, you can put these items in there. And if you prepare ahead of time, you'll be ready when you need to leave your home in a hurry. And these items could include the maps. They could include your personal protective equipment, the list of medications. Things like that. We talk about list important things that you don't want to forget in an emergency: your keys, your wallet, phone and charger, portable radio, flashlights, first aid supplies, your laptop or your tablet, and then things like just your medications are extremely important. All prescriptions taken by your family members, names and numbers of your doctors and your pharmacies, other important medical information. And another one is bring some cash. If the power's out, credit and debit card readers won't work. You won't maybe able to not get money from the ATM, so store away some of those $1 or $5 bills in small increments, because if you need to buy something, you need those cash in small increments will be an important component to that. And as we move forward into that, I also want to talk about a stay box. Well, and a stay box is something that if you're going to stay at home, right, a stay box might be a container that you fill with supplies that will help you and your family survive at home for three or days or more. If in a disaster, right, roads might be blocked and maybe rescuers can't get to you right away, and you're going to need some of these supplies to survive at home. Some of those things, for instance, might be water. For instance, a gallon of water per person per day. You want to store at least 3 gallons per person to last 3 days. That's 2 quarts for consumption and 2 quarts for personal use. This gets into the idea about foods. Foods that don't need cooking or refrigeration, ready-to-eat food in bags, boxes, or cans. And plus, you'll need to make sure that you have it available and easily accessible to you. And other items might include trash bags that can be used in many ways to store different things. And then, again, other things like batteries for flashlight, baby supplies, pet supplies, and then health needs like diabetes syringes or extra medication. And the last step, really, and the five steps of preparedness is to help your friends and neighbors prepare. It's about taking care of each other. Remember, oftentimes, 90% of the time, a neighbor is the first person there to help. And so if we can take these steps to take care of each other and have these conversations, connect with our community. Who's at home at your house during the day? And who is at home in your neighborhood who might be available to help during the day? What about at night or weekend? And who in your neighborhood might need help, right? These are those things that we can do to make a significant difference right now, today, for the event that potentially can happen tomorrow. And, you know, Monica, I do want to just offer this to everybody. ITEMA.org, if you go itema.org/leastdose, you can get online and we can take a little preparedness quiz, and we will send you a free bottle, a preparedness bottle, if you take this 5 points of preparedness quiz. And every night for the next week or the month, on Tuesday nights, we're doing a 5 points of preparedness call. And then we're also doing online training for the community emergency response training. Starting on Wednesday. So we want to encourage people to go to itema.org/training, and there are Zoom links. They're all Zoom. So if people throughout Indian Country want to participate in these classes to learn more about preparedness, we want to encourage you. Some of the classes are in Spanish, but we want to go out and make sure our tribal communities are prepared. So we want to encourage you. ITEMA, ITEMA.org/training, free classes. And they're starting. We're doing a whole bunch of training the month of March, and we want to encourage everyone to, if you really want to learn more about these conversations that we're having today, join us and participate on these calls. We would really love to share that information with all of you.
It's a low stakes test, though. Don't stress out for all of you that have test anxiety.
That's right. It is literally just an online little quiz, so we can send you the bottle. But the goal is there's a little video for you to watch, and then we'll send you the preparedness bottle. We want to put preparedness in your hands, right? And this is the thing. It starts with a conversation. Preparedness is not this monumental undertaking that needs to incite fear or concern. It's little things that you can do right now to make a big difference tomorrow. And that's the goal. Whether it's the pandemic, an earthquake, a fire, or flood, we know that we are vulnerable to these, especially in Indian country. But if we talk about it, we have a plan, and we have a conversation, and we talk about these 5 points of preparedness, getting those alerts so we know what to do when it happens. We talk about making a plan. We're talking about packing our go bag, our stay box, and talking to our friends, family, and neighbors. Together, we are stronger, right? Together, we can make a difference. And that's the goal that these conversations that we have on the radio today, that's the beauty of the discussion that we can, together, we can prepare our communities. We can prepare our tribal communities. We are already prepared. We are already resilient. It's just enhancing that to make sure that we're taking care of those things that matter to us the most, our families, our culture, and our traditions.
I'll put a link to that on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. Richard, we're getting close to the end of the hour, but I want to give you a moment. What are the small little things that we can do, you know, on the medical side of things to prepare for the next pandemic?
Well, I think what's really, really important is basically keep yourself educated. Keep yourself aware of what's happening in the community and the communities around us, and be open to the science. There are too many myths out there right now about whether it be vaccine, whether it be about the virus itself, that still seem to linger even though we've surpassed 500,000 deaths in this country due to COVID. For me, it's important to basically understand and learn. That's the way we're going to keep abreast of things, and we're going to be able to share knowledge and have a long-term impact on the health of our communities.
And, you know, what sources do you trust for good information?
For me, I go to the CDC. You know, I think now we have a freer flowing of real, I guess, information coming from them. With the last administration, I think we had some hiccups. And changing. But the understanding is, in a pandemic, things are going to change, because when it's new, then the response changes according to the current data that we have. So, yes, the rules may change, you know, from 1 month to the next, but that's understandable, because we now know so much more than we did several months ago about how this virus is transmitted, how it changes, how it impacts the community. So keeping abreast of the latest information is absolutely critical.
And, you know, just before we go, Richard, I want to give you an opportunity to let folks know where they can learn more about the Consolidated Tribal Health Project.
Consolidated Tribal Health, our website is cthp.org. And like I said, we currently serve primarily 8 sovereign nations in the Mendocino County, California. And we are really, really excited about the advances that we've had. We've had a very, very positive response considering the dire state of the pandemic. So we feel good that we are now turned the corner and are making some really strong headway.
All right, well, that'll do it for our conversation today. Thank you so much to all of our guests, including Jake Heflin, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Richard Maiton. We're back tomorrow with a conversation about Mexican Indigenous identity. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good one. We'll be right back.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Skirk tash. I'm go hither to skirk chigat it at either. I'm my nigga eat up more muskir mud. Tap o' bush woods come hoy duck. A boy hugger to go mama came up a meak and bite your smile. A more chiska I'm healthcare.gov. A more hugger I'm hamako gigic sicker. Why hamako gigic go cut us pumuk jut. Eat up umjit him of Centers for Medicare to Medicaid Hachipkan.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.